Welcome to Tori Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yecheskel Perek Lamed Bet, Chapter 32. This chapter is the fourth Perek of Nevuah about Mitzrayim, about Egypt, and it contains the sixth Nevuah from Sukkim Aleph 2 Tet Zion, and the seventh Nevuah from Sukkim 17 to 32. This is the last parak about Egypt, and also the last parak of the section of Nevuot, prophecies about the nations. The time of these Nevuot is auspicious. Both Nevuot, both sections of Nevuah in this parak, take place in the 12th year after Galut Yehoyachin, in the month of Adar, about a year and a half after the Chorban. By this time, there is no longer a Beit HaMikdash. The rest of the Jews of Yerushalayim have either been destroyed or exiled. Yecheskel and the Jews of Bavel only find out about the Chorban 2 months earlier when, as we'll learn in the next parak, a survivor makes it to Bavel and tells them about the destruction. With this date, we have a transition between the prophecies of Yecheskel about Egypt from before the Chorban to the prophecies about Egypt after the Chorban. And one of the questions that we're going to explore when we read this parak is there a difference between Yecheskel's Nevuot before and this parak, which is his Nevuot after? Does this parak reflect in any way the news that Yecheskel just got about how the Babylonians razed Jerusalem and the destruction that was meted out there? This parak, like the final parak about Tzur, is also written as a kinah, a liturgical poem that's usually used at a funeral or a time of mourning. This kinah, though, notes the Dat Mikra, is not one of participation in the mourning. It's not one of sadness at the demise, but one that uses the kinah structure to describe the demise and almost celebrates it. There's a justification when an empire receives the punishment that it deserves. The theme of the kinah is about something that we've discussed before, and that is hubris and the justification of the fall when you have a nation that acts with such haughtiness. And the imagery that is used in the beginning of the kinah returns to an imagery that we saw in the beginning, in Parak 29, which is about this sea monster in the Nile. And with this, Yecheskel creates a bookends, meaning he begins and ends his prophecies about Egypt in the same way. And he talks about Egypt as this great fish that lives in the river. Pasuk Bet, Ben Adam, Sa Kina al Paro Melch Mitzrayim. Say a lamentation about Paro, the king of Egypt, but Amar Taylev, and say to him, Kfir Goyim Nidmeta. You thought of yourself as a lion against the nations. Bata Kitanim Vayamim. But you're actually this sea monster in the seas. Vatagach b'narotacha, vatidlach mayim b'raglecha, vatirpos naharotam. You broke forth with your rivers and troubled the waters with your feet and fouled their rivers. Okay, what does this mean? So Yecheskel in this pasuk introduced a second animal, one that we haven't seen before, into the picture, and that is the kfir, the young lion. And Yechiel Tzvi Moskvitz in the Das Mikra explains that the lion rules the land while the sea monster, the great fish, rules the water. Egypt is this large fish, but it thinks of itself like a lion. It imagines itself to have dominion over both sea and land. It doesn't think of itself actually as a prisoner of the Nile. Rather, if it wanted to, it could hop onto the land and roar there as well. The Nile is what gives this huge fish its ability to think of itself as greater than it actually is. And like the sea monster in Parak 29, the hubris of this fish, or as the Malbim says, a crocodile, is exposed when it's removed from the water. In Pasuk Gimel, Ko Amar Hashem Elokim, Uparashi Alecha Et Rishti, B'Kahal Amim Rabim, Ve'Elucha Becharmi, I'm going to set a net against you, and I'll pull you out of the water. And then, v'natashti ba'aretz al pnei ha-sedeh v'atilecha, I'm going to just leave you on the land. I'm going to cast you in the open field. If this sounds familiar, it's because Yecheskel used a lot of this imagery back in Parak 29, in the opening parak. And then, v'hishkanti alecha kol ufa shamayim, v'shbati mimecha chayat kol ha'aretz. And then all of the birds are going to settle on you. Maybe they'll eat your dead body, basically. And all the animals will come and they'll set themselves upon you. And basically, instead of being fierce and mighty, the king of his domain, the crocodile, this sea monster, this fierce fish is shown to be frail and weak as soon as there's no water source. All along, it turns out, he was so dependent on the Nile for his strength. And it didn't last as soon as he was removed from his source. Egypt had such a hold over the countries in its region. They dominated Africa and Israel for a time and gave the people of Yehuda false hope of their salvation only because they believed this myth of Egypt's power, and Egypt believed it themselves. And then when Babel shows up, it's clear how weak they really were all along. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, Ki Ko Amar Hashem Elokim, Cherev Melech Babel Tevo Echa, the sword of the king of Babylon is coming on you. And then in Pasuk Yud Bet, number 12, Becharvot Kiborim Apil Hamonecha, by the sword of your mighty, I'm going to cause all your people, this multitude of people, this strong nation is just going to fall. Artzei Goyim Kulam, all these terrible nations, gone. V'shadidu et go'on Mitzrayim, they're going to break the pride of Egypt, Neshmad Kol Hamona, and all its large people, all of its multitudes are just going to be destroyed. And their blood is going to run over all the country, and they're so big that all the animals can feast on their bodies. And with their fall, their pride is brought down. All of that false pride that came from really never being attacked because of their geography and never really experiencing any famine or want because of the Nile. And neither one having to do with actual strength or anything really to be impressive. Both of those are what they were born into. Both of those are gifts of their geography and really gifts of Hashem, but they didn't realize that. They didn't realize how dependent they were. And because they had these things, the Nile and their geography as being at the top of Africa, they thought of themselves as protected, and they believed their own myth, how strong they were. And there is a certain justice in bringing down Mitzrayim, one that they will recognize as well as all the other countries in the world. Pasuk Tet Vav, verse 15, B'titi et Eretz Mitzrayim Shmama, when I make the land of Egypt desolate, V'nashma ha'aretz mimlo'a, V'hakoti et kol yoshveva, V'yad'u ki ani Hashem, and when I make all of its lands, all of its filled lands are going to end up being destroyed and all of its people will be hit, then you'll know that I am Hashem. And that is, again, here Yechezkel's tagline, V'yad'u ki ani Hashem, you will know that I am God. It's not just about the Jews. It's actually about the world. As the haughty are brought down, Hashem's presence is shown. We discuss this idea that this is this concept of Yom Hashem, a day when anyone who thought of themselves as posing a challenge to God, one who would build their towers to the sky, one who thought of themselves as independently strong, they're suddenly exposed to actually be very weak, and then they're just gone. The second section of this parak, the second kina, which starts in Pasuk 19 and is given a few weeks later, also in the 12th year and also in the month of Adar, has a similar theme. Yechezkel turns to Mitzrayim and looks at its former grandeur in Pasuk Yetet. Mimi na'amta rada v'hashkava al arilim. Whom do you pass in beauty? You were the most beautiful of all the countries, and now go lie down with the arilim, with the uncircumcised. They were the ones that used to be so powerful, and now they're just lying there, totally powerless and exposed. There, as they are cut down and totally weakened, they join this group of other nations, these arilim, these uncircumcised, who are already cut down by Hashem. And then what Yechezkel does, it's really unbelievable, but he goes through history and he gives a list of all these other countries who were also so haughty, so full of themselves, and also just brought down. And here's a list of the countries that Yechezkel names. Pasuk Kaf Bet 22. Shem Ashur, as you fall down into this grave, who are you going to find there if not Assyria? Kol Ga'ala and all of its people, Svivotav, Kfaratav, and all the graves around it, Kulam Chalalim, Hanuflim Bacharev, they are all these corpses that fell at the sword. And then he goes on, Pasuk Avdalid, Sham Elam, B'chol Hamona, there you find the country of Elam. Pasuk Kavav, Sham Meshech, Tuval. B'chol Hamona, there you find the countries of Meshech and Tuval and all of their people. Pasuk Kavtet, Shama Edom, Umalcheha. B'chol Nesi'ah, you're going to find Edom and all of its kings and all of its princes. Asher Nitnu B'gvuratam, Et Chalalei Cherev. That they gave over their strong ones to become corpses. Hema et aralim yishkavu. They're also going to lie down with the uncircumcised at your daybor and those who descend to the pits. Pasuk lamed shem nisrei tzafon. There you're going to find all the princes of the north, kulam, all of them, v'chol tzidoni, in all the countries of Tzidon. And there comes Paro, joining this long line of countries who themselves were so haughty, and now look at them and look at where they are. Otam yer'eh Paro, says Yechezkel in Pasuk 31. Paro's going to see them. V'nicham al kol hamona. And Paro is going to be comforted over all of his multitudes. Chalalei cheref Paro v'chol chelo ne'um Hashem Elokim. All of his corpses that were killed by the sword and all of his army were just killed. And Rashi explains that when it says he'll be comforted, he sees, oh, at least he's not the only one. He's just one of a long line of countries that were just like him, which means to say invincible until they weren't, until they were destroyed. And Paro sees himself suddenly in his demise as just one of a long line of countries. And now, this brings us to the question that we raised in the beginning, which is, does this parak reflect at all the news that Yechezkel receives in Parak Lamed Gimel in our next parak 2 months before this prophecy happened? Does it reflect at all the destruction of Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash? Is this parak different than the other prakim about the fall of Egypt? Now, I'd like to propose three answers to this question. The first answer is brought by Yechiel Tzvi Moskowitz in the Dat Mikra, who proposes that this parak, which is with its intimate portrayal of the destruction of Mitzrayim, is actually Yechezkel's reaction to the Chorban. And there's a certain sense of comfort and justice that the nation who stayed out of the fight and made it always seem like they would help Yehuda but never did, they get their punishment. And that's one way of looking at this parak. A second answer comes perhaps from Sefer Yirmiyahu. And we need to go turn our attention now to what was happening after the Chorban. And while the Chorban was final and terrible, there was still a small community that survived and was left in Israel. It was this community that Yirmiyahu had to convince, unsuccessfully actually, not to desert the land of Israel after the assassination of Gedaliah and flee to Egypt. Yechezkel's nevuah perhaps supports Yirmiyahu's later prophecy. While Egypt seems like it somehow got by, it remained unscathed by the Babylonian onslaught, its reprieve is actually short-lived, says Yechezkel. Egypt too will fall to Babylonia, and not in so long. Egypt, the country of Bnei Israel's first oppression, the one who didn't come to their aid during the rebellion against Babylonia, is not a place of safety. It's a country that, like the sea monster out of water, has just a little time left before it too is destroyed. And that's almost more of a historical answer. And then as a third approach to this question, is there any change, or do we see some type of ramification of the news of the Chorban on this perek? And I'd like to turn to a final answer, which is noted by Rav Yehiel ben Nun, and deals with this list of countries that Yechezkel cites at the end of the perek. Mitzrayim, in their desolation, will join Ashur, Elam, Meshech, Tuval, Edom, Sidon, all the nations who at one point tried to hurt the Jewish people and who reveled in their invincibility. All of them fell and are not only not a threat, but they actually no longer exist. And we say something like this on the Seder night. Shebechol dor vador, omdim aleinu l'chalotenu, v'akadosh baruch hu matzilenu mi'adam. Every generation, there's enemies who stand and try to hurt us, and Hashem saves us from their hand. Those enemies seemed like they'll never be able to be destroyed. And yet, generation after generation, they are. At the time of the saying of this nevuah, Mitzrayim isn't yet brought down. But like all enemies of the Jews, they will fall, says Yechezkel, and we will survive. Yechezkel doesn't speak about the fall of Bavel, but it's clear that he means that they will too. These perpetrators of the Chorban will also fall one day, never to rise again. Rav Yoel Binden describes how all the mighty emperors that existed in 1917, the Germans, the Austro-Hungarian, the Russian, and the Ottoman empires, they ended up gone within a few years, something no one could have anticipated. And then the empires that replaced them also collapsed. Perhaps Yechezkel, hearing the news of the destruction, consoled the people by reminding them of the cycle of Jewish history. Egypt seemed to survive the onslaught of Babylonia while you fell. Here you are, destroyed, stuck in Galut, while they continue living strongly in their unique land. Just wait, says Yechezkel. It's not going to be like that pretty soon. Look back at the last few hundred years. None of the countries who tried to overtake you and kill you actually won. And yet here you are, alive, still standing. Yaakov Maidan, in this vein, sees a reference in some of these psukim to some of the Makot, in the way that Yechezkel describes the downfall of Mitzrayim. For example, in Pasuk Vav, V'hashkiti eretz tzavta midamecha el haharim v'afikim yimlaucha mayim. I will also water with your blood the land in which you swim, even to the mountains, and the water courses shall be full of you. This is talking about this death of the sea monster. And says Rav Maidan, you hear these echoes of the makah, of dam, of blood, when the blood of the sea monster will fill the rivers. In Pasukhet, verse 8, Kol me'orei or bashamayim akadreim alecha, all the bright lights of the sky will make dark over you. V'natati choshech al artzacha, ne'um Hashem Elokim. And I'll set darkness on your land. Obviously, a reference to Makat Choshech. And he points out many psukim here could be references to Makat Bechorot, the death of all the strong ones. This reference to the Makot, this allusion, expresses perhaps Hashem's care for Bnei Israel, as he did in that time, as well as his hand in nature. When Yechezkel says this parak, Egypt is still thriving. It doesn't have any makot. It's not yet vanquished by Bavel. But Yechezkel the prophet knows that it won't last. And while his nation seems to be teetering, Yechezkel is a student of prophecy and history, and knows that together they will prove to be decisive. The evil empires will not prevail, while Bnei Israel will rise once again. Thank you for learning together, Le'ilui Nishmas Barbara Atlas Bracha Bas Avraham. She was a beacon of light to all who knew her. Barbara's kindness and generosity had no bounds.